global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
From Bloomberg World Headquarters, I'm Charlie Pellett. Stocks are higher. Dow Jones Industrial Average briefly topping the 18,000 level for the first time since July, right now at 18,001, up 103 points, gaining 0.6%. S&P also up by 0.6%. We are brought to you by Commonwealth Financial Network. When it's time to change the conversation, talk with a broker-dealer, RIA, that's ready to listen. Call 866-462-3638 or visit commonwealth.com to learn more. NASDAQ up 18, a gain of 0.4%. 10-year down 6/32, the yield 1.77%. Gold lower, little change, down 40 cents now, 12.3420. Crude oil post-Doha down 1.4%, dropping 58 cents, $39.78 a barrel for West Texas Intermediate crude. I'm Charlie Pellett. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash.
Charlie Pellett, thank you so very much. Joining us from Bloomberg World Headquarters in New York City, I'm Kathleen Hayes along with Pim Fox. We're live in Washington, D.C. today, home of Bloomberg 99.1. Why are we here? Because we had a chance to sit down with Frank Gehry, the world's most renowned living architect. He's being honored today and tonight by the Foundation for Art and Preservation in Embassies. When we talked to him today, one of the things we focused on was his beautiful Guggenheim Museum in Bilbao, Spain, something he said helped turn that beaten-down economy around. We talked to him about his fascination with fish and technology and steps he took at that time that have helped revolutionize how architecture is done.
Fish, because of growing up in California as an architect, it was Asia-centric. So I knew all about Japan, and I knew all the temples, and I knew all the Hiroshige drawings of fish and how beautiful they were, and I watched the koi in the fish ponds in Japan, and so I made a fish lamp by accident, and it became a show, and it sold, and all that kind of stuff that happens. But I became more interested in it as an architectural thing, and I was asked by a fashion house in Italy to do a fish. And so I made a 35-foot-long wooden fish in the Pitti Palace, and I put a fashion model inside, like Jonah and the whale, and then had them fashion people all around in their outfits. I never saw it in person in the Pitti Palace, but the show went to the Castello di Rivoli. I stood beside this wooden fish, which was very kitsch. It had eyes, it had fins. It was embarrassingly kitsch. And I stood beside it, and I felt the movement. And I said, you know, like Archimedes. Ye gods, I found it, you know. So I then started to cut the tail away, get rid of all the kitsch parts, and I still could feel that movement. And then I needed to figure out a way to build it. I went to the computer because I couldn't figure it out. Somebody in the office took me to IBM, which took us to Dassault Systems in France, who build airplanes, and we started using their computer system. Once I got into it, I realized this could change the industry. The industry of architecture is overpowered somehow by the construction, the rest of the construction industry. The creative architects are treated like the sweetie pie, like the little woman. Us big men's know how to do it. So I was able to take control of the project and eliminate change orders and push them back into their place. And I've done it over and over again personally. Now I've tried to give that to the rest of my profession, and some have taken it up. Zaha, certainly, Zaha Hadid, who just passed on, was one of the people that embraced it and took it somewhere else. I think ultimately architects have to become the master builders again.
talk a little bit about material, the actual materials that go into making buildings. And I'm wondering whether the advances that are made in composite materials that are now used for jetliners, for the skin of buildings, for reflective and curved surfaces, what kinds of building materials do you foresee in the future? What kind of innovation? And also, if you want, whether there's an element of environmental awareness that is changing the nature of the industry.
The environmental thing has become a kind of a mantra that I think is people are proud to have a little pin that says they're a member of the environmental clubs. We've actually, our consultants in Germany, Transolar, studied 300 projects that were approved by the professional standards that we use in the U.S. and found that the 300 projects were all using more energy than a normal building. So I don't think that's carefully monitored. It's more of a feel-good thing, I'm afraid. The reality is, like, we're building a house now that will be 80% off the grid. To do it on a house, you spend at least 10 to 15% extra to do it. That those are not recoverable in your lifetime. It doesn't pay off in your lifetime. So it's very difficult to get. I did it because I just wanted to see where it goes. But I don't think I can get clients to agree with it. I think this is a political bigger than us individuals. It's Putin and Obama and Merkel and everybody like that has to do it. And they're trying. I think they're trying. It's a bigger issue than it should be. It should be mandated from a higher level.
I want to follow up on that composite question and just how the materials have changed. Because as much as you started using computers to help design building so precisely, how have the advances in the materials and the technology of the materials, how does that inspire you? Does it change your work, or does it just make it easier and cheaper?
Well, we use whatever we can. The composites that are used, we do use some of it. So far, I mean, it's improving. So far, it doesn't have the gravitas of the real stone and the real materials, so it's a little bit dicey, but it's getting better. And it's lighter, obviously. We use whatever we can. We use composites. I just built a boat with composite wood, cold form wood, with carbon fiber, and when you sail, carbon fiber is a big deal. So we're aware of it. We try to use it.
Tell us about some of your other buildings and projects. I know that, for example, the Battersea Power Station on the Thames is now going to be reflected literally in a Frank Gehry building.
And that building, we're using composite exterior skin. That's under construction. We did not do the urban planning, so we're in a really tight conglomeration of buildings by Foster and others. We'll see how that turns out. I'm more interested now in the, I got caught in, the mayor of LA asked me to look at the LA River, which is 51 miles long, and I looked at it, and I got caught in it, and now I'm in it, and I'm a volunteer in it. So I'm there. I would guess about 40% of my time is spent on trying to sort this out. It's 51 miles. It has 15 political entities. City of LA, one of them. All of the communities south of the City of LA are Latino communities. Nobody's ever asked them about, and we've got them all involved. We've got the governor involved. We've got the state legislature and Speaker of the House and a lot of people involved trying to sort this out. Laurie Olin, landscape architect, is a good friend of mine. He's also working on it with me. We're developing a language for how to use the river as a for reclamation, gain, reclaim water, which has been lost up to now, to for recharge, to get basins, which can be temporarily lakes along the river. The economics of it, when you factor in health and water reclamation and all of that, is enormously positive. And I think it's, if they follow through on it, it's going to be an interesting experiment.
Frank Gehry, architect, the founder and partner of Gehry Partners. They're based in Los Angeles. He is the recipient of the 2016 Annenberg Award for Diplomacy through the Arts, given by the Foundation for Art and Preservation in Embassies. You're listening to Taking Stock, coming to you from Washington, D.C., home of Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 HD2.